So that's the first commitment. Having made that commitment, and again, I'm not talking about the fact that we make the full journey, but the commitment has to be there, the commitment to our own human life and being a genuine person. It has to be there first. Having done that, then we have the second commitment of the bodhisattva, which is caring for beings. And this is the one that we're more familiar with from Buddhism in general. And I just want to talk a little bit about that. There are six so-called selfless engagements, you could call them. They're paramitas in Sanskrit, but they're engaging people in a way that is not reaffirming our own egohood. And I'm just going to mention them and say a word or two about each one. The first one is generosity, meaning the willingness to receive other people as they are. And it's always interesting here at the Datum, you people who are here attending, you may not show up as you are, but within a couple days, you start showing who you are. And then you start being who you are. Now, the reaction of the staff is interesting. The word panic has been used. You know, we are all excessive people. To be human is to be excessive. Excessive means beyond the bounds, out of the box, over the top, beyond the edge. And we're all that way. Our basic manifestation, you know, how empty we can be, how crazy, wild, loving, tender, freaked out, paranoid, you name it. We're excessive. And I hope all of you will become meditation instructors sometime, because it's actually really great training. Because, you know, you can be, the job of the meditation instructor is really simple. It's just simply be there. It doesn't sound that hard, does it? The participant comes in and they start talking about their life, and your only job is be there. And there's one other tiny one: don't freak out. Don't panic. And, you know, that that's generosity, is being willing to be with other people as they really are. You know, if somebody comes in there phony and, oh, you know, I love the Dharma and, you know, everything's great, that's easy. I mean, you just sit there and kind of think about something else. But if somebody comes in and tells you exactly what's going on with them, there's a high tendency to panic. And the discipline of the bodhisattva, the first one of these six, is to really be willing to receive people as they are and just be there and don't go away. That's all it is. It's that simple. The second one is, and why is that important? Because, you know, we humans are interpersonal in our, interconnected in our life, and we need to be seen and we need to be received in order to grow. And it's true of babies. It is completely true of babies. You know, brain research shows us that if a baby is not with an adult that can receive them, and that can an adult who is sufficiently developed that the baby sees in the adult, or the baby experiences in the adult, what, you know, human relationship is, you know, warmth and interaction and talking and loving, you know, all the things that we do when we're healthy as adults or reasonably healthy. If a baby doesn't get that, either because the mother is not there or the caregiver is not there, or because the caregiver, him or herself, is damaged, then those neurons in the baby do not develop. Babies cannot develop unless they see what they have to develop to. But it's not just true of babies. It's actually true of all of us. We need to be held. Held means we need the presence of somebody who can receive who we are in order, even at the neurological level, for our neurons to grow in our brain. That's why spirituality is a tradition. That's why a spiritual tradition needs to receive people to develop spiritually. That's why it's very hard to do it. You can't really do it from books, because you need the human presence in order even for your brain to develop the neurons that correspond to spiritual development. It's very, very interesting. So the generosity, you know, the first of these paramitas, it's not a sort of love and light kind of thing, oh, that's really great, we're going to hold you and you're going to go through your development. I have to be there and I have to receive you fully and totally, and that opens up the same capacity in you. And when you're a meditation instructor for somebody else, you have to be there and receive them totally, so it opens up the same capacity in the person you're talking to, and that's what a lineage is. It goes down. The second one is called discipline, and that means that we have to be constant and unwavering in our commitments to other people. You know, if we are quixotic, if we are on again, off again, it's not going to work. We have to be there because there has to be, we have to show a level of trust that then is can be inspiring to somebody else. If you've never seen trust, it's very hard to develop it. If you've never been loved, it's very hard to develop it. Somehow, we as humans have to experience those qualities, or we can't develop them. It's often said that, you know, in a totally dysfunctional family, all a child needs is one person to see them, and then the development can occur. If there's nobody, very, very difficult. The third paramita is known as exertion. So these are ways that we as bodhisattvas need in order to care for beings. So we're talking about the second commitment. Exertion means it has two sides of it. One is overcoming our own fear. Our own fear of being exposed, our desire to run away. We all want to run when things get hot. Exertion means that we are willing to stick with things. We're willing to extend ourselves. We're willing to open up, and we don't run. And the second side of exertion is having a tremendous amount of trust in the situation that we're in, whatever it may be. If we happen to wake up one morning and we are in prison, wrongfully in prison for something we didn't do, exertion is willing to be there and work with the situation and see what the possibilities are. Sounds like a slightly far-fetched example, but in some sense all of us are in prisons that we did not create. Prisons of our family, prisons of our society, prisons of our social class, prisons of our gender. In some sense, all of us are in prisons of one kind or another, prisons of our own psychological conditioning. It's not our fault. It's not my fault. You know, it's not a baby's fault that they had a certain mother, a certain father. We wake up and we're in prison. And exertion means that we use that situation, that we're willing to be fully, completely, totally in the situation without a thought and see what the possibilities are. And use the opportunities of situation to help other people. Patience, which is number four, means being, and this is a very, very challenging one for those of us who think of ourselves as being Buddhist, which a lot of us don't. You know, I don't think of myself as being a Buddhist. I'm drawing on the tradition, but my understanding isn't that. But a lot of us do think we're Buddhists. That's fine. But patience means that in situations with other people, we are utterly without agenda. No agenda. And the most oppressive agenda is the agenda of helping other people. Many of us who are inspired to the Bodhisattva path are professional saviors. We're professional saviors. We get our meaning in life by helping other people, by, I should say, helping other people. And we've spent our whole life since we were 4 years old saving other people. And it becomes an essential part of our identity. We are the most dangerous of all people to others. When we take the Bodhisattva vow, we are abandoning our savior mentality. We are willing to be in situations with other people where it's completely naked, eye level and without agenda, and we're willing to trust them, trusting the other person, trusting their sanity. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be confused and lost and negative and even hurtful to others, but there's a fundamental trust in their goodness and their capacity and their basic humanity. And we are willing to be naked and see what happens, see what comes out of the situation. Whenever we are in the situation, as, you know, in that way, life shows us what needs to happen. But in order to find out what needs to happen, we have to strip ourselves of any and all agendas whatsoever, particularly the one of trying to help other people. So that's patience, letting life determine the direction and the pace and what needs to happen. Then we have the fifth of the paramitas, or the actions in the care of others, which is meditation. And that means the willingness to do whatever we have to do to stay deeply rooted. We have, rooted, and rooted means in the natural state, in the unborn mind, in the ocean of wisdom that is at the basis of our own personality, to do whatever we have to do to stay there. And if what we have to do to stay rooted as bodhisattvas is meditate 23 hours a day, and we spend 1 hour with other people, then that's what we have to do. We have a group that has developed through the marriage of Caroline Saymara Foundation and the Dharma Ocean Foundation called the Vajrayana Maitri Project. And we have a group of people who are taking responsibility for it. And one aspect of our conversation is, we all have had different experiences of so-called engaged Buddhism. And while the inspiration of engaged Buddhism around the world is really wonderful, the tendency toward burnout is huge. And the typical engaged Buddhist is a person who hasn't really meditated in a long time, and they're out there on the front line trying to help other people, but they're trying to get their power from somewhere other than meditation, and it doesn't work. The problems of the world are so deep that humans can't solve the problems of the world. The only way in which the problems of the world are going to be solved is if we unleash the forces of life itself on the problems, and we present ourselves as being vehicles of that energy of life. The compassion of reality itself needs to be unleashed through us. We need to be a conduit, not a generator. We can't generate electricity for the planet. To think that we can do it is such a hubris. It's such an overestimation of human capacity. But if we realize that we can be a conduit, we can be the wire from the power source to the light bulb. If we are willing to play that humble a role, meaning that we have to stay rooted in the nature in order to do the work, then it can be done, we can do it, and it can happen. So we've just been talking about how do we move forward in this Vajrayana Maitri project, which is contributing our voice to the engaged Buddhism movement, but really contributing what we have to offer, which is this piece I'm mentioning right now. We need to draw from the source. We need to let the source be the energy of compassion and transformation in the world, not our own ego and not our own ideas about what it means to help people. And then the last one is wisdom or prajna. So we're talking again about the six paramitas. And this one is that we don't get hung up on our own viewpoint. We talk about prajna in the Mahayana as being the experience of emptiness or wisdom. And, oh, emptiness, wow, that's really cool. We need to, really experience emptiness. But what we don't realize is in the Mahayana, emptiness has teeth. Emptiness is like grounded. Emptiness is a very practical teaching. And the practical teaching is that we don't get hung up on what we think should be happening. And number two is we're not out there looking for confirmation, praise, or payoff from what we're doing. We're willing to be empty at the beginning, which is no agenda, no viewpoint. We're willing to be empty through the process, which is not getting stuck on what we think. And we're willing to be empty at the end, which is not where we're not looking to get fed by what we do and built up and confirmed and praised. So willing to be groundless through the whole process, which is really asking a lot. I mean, usually when we give things in life, it's, you know, I'm willing to give things in life, but, you know, I want something back. It's known as, you know, it's like when people give money to organizations. And, you know, if you give money to Dharma Ocean, you're going to see it's a little different here. And I'm not saying that people don't do it in this way that I'm talking about, but usually there's this thing in fundraising like you have to stroke your donors. And if your donor gives you something, your donor's going to want certain things, and the donor communicates in sort of very kind of civilized ways what they want, what they expect, because they're giving you something. And then, and I'm not talking, you know, about any particular organization. I'm talking about, like, you know, when I worked at Naropa, it was just known this is how you do it. When you fundraise, you know, you have to, like, do certain things to sort of feed the donor. And this one is there's no payoff. That we give of our life, and the reward, it's not the reward doesn't happen, but what comes back to us comes back on a totally different level, and it's much more powerful. When we give our life to sentient beings, and we are, we try to help them, and they don't understand, they don't get it, they don't care, or even they get angry at us because we have made them uncomfortable, that's really not only okay, it's a confirmation of the journey, of our own journey. So the emptiness part is being willing to give one's life to the world and to sentient beings, and not to be sitting there demanding any kind of particular reference point or payback or confirmation, or even that anybody even noticed. So that's number six, and it's the basic summary in the Prajnaparamita, which is these wonderful Mahayana texts, is if we as bodhisattvas think of ourselves as being bodhisattvas, then we're not bodhisattvas. The only bodhisattva who is a true bodhisattva is the bodhisattva who does not think for a minute that he or she is a bodhisattva. A person who's living beyond the ideology totally and living with sentient beings and sharing their life and trusting what comes out of that utter openness and nakedness and sharing with the other.